Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking about the Maine Development Foundation's 2013 July Jobs Report, just released. And we're going to be talking with two great guests. First, Maggie Drummond. She's the Program Director for the Maine Development Foundation. And John Doerr, Senior Advisor for Jobs for the Future. John, first, give me an opportunity here to hear what Jobs for the Future actually is.
Jobs for the Future is a national nonprofit organization that's based in Boston that is committed to managing research and demonstration projects across the country, designed to facilitate and assist people connecting from school to work and preparing people for productive experiences in the labor market.
No, that's great. How does the MDF get involved with this?
Maine Development Foundation is a statewide nonprofit organization that was founded about 30 years ago and is actually unique in Maine in that we were created by the governor and the legislature at the time to be a partner in the state's long-term sustainable economic growth. So as we were looking at and having conversations about getting involved in doing jobs reports for the state, we wanted to partner with John, who has a long history in Maine and with Jobs for the Future, doing this type of work. And so that's how this strategic partnership came about.
You know, she mentioned a little bit, John, about your history, and I think it'd be important for the audience to know a little bit about your background to understand why this is important to you and why this is important to the state.
Well, I served for 7 years as the director of the Center for Workforce Research and Information at the state of Maine Department of Labor, being responsible for producing the employment and unemployment statistics and advising the governor on workforce and labor market policy. Towards the end, also served as acting commissioner of the Department of Labor for Governor LePage, and have spent my entire life basically as a labor economist studying the workings of labor markets and basically how people prepare, the skills they acquire, and how they effectively compete in labor markets. So that's been really my life's work.
Well, you've been doing it a long time. I remember being on a show with you, Maine Watch, about a year ago, so we had fun doing that.
Yes.
And as I've said many times, radio's a lot better because it's not as hot under those lights, that's for sure. You know, we're talking in particular today about Maine Employers Initiative, Next Step Maine, and Measures of Growth Report. So tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Maine Development Foundation has a number of programs under our umbrella, and most of those programs, all of those programs, are in some way addressing issues in the Maine economy. So we'll talk a little bit more about the jobs report that we're developing right now with John, but some of the other things we do include we staff the Maine Economic Growth Council and release the Measures of Growth report every year, and that report tracks benchmarks in the Maine economy. So it can be used by policymakers and others statewide to keep track of what's actually going on in the state. The programs that I work on, the Maine Employers Initiative, is our effort to work with employers around the state and in particular human resources directors and managers to help them invest in the education and training of their employees. And the Next Step Maine campaign grew out of that effort, and it was our way of supporting those working adults who are going back to school to earn a degree or to get additional specialized training. The Next Step Maine campaign includes a website that compiles resources for those adult students because, of course, adult students are going back to school under different circumstances than those 18-year-olds coming straight out of high school. They need more flexible schedules. They need different sorts of supports than those new students coming in. And we started a scholarship program associated with that campaign this year and gave out 17 scholarships in our first year to working adults who are also going back to school and raising families and doing that really difficult work of earning a degree after being in the workplace for quite a while.
There's no question there's a lot of that here in Maine, and there's a lot of individuals who really need the assistance and really need a direction and focus and change the way that they have to look at work, as manufacturing here in Maine has changed quite a bit. John, we were talking a little about this first quarter jobs report, and before we get into the depth of the report and all that, so what is the job market in Maine like?
Well, it's not very good. I think that's one way to summarize it. Maine.
Well, thanks for the interview. That's
one of the three states in the country that has been really seriously lagging in terms of job creation is Maine. So over the last year, when other states have started to put jobs on the board, Maine has failed to do so. So from the standpoint of net job increases, Maine is lagging, and I'd say in trouble. However, I think we should not get lulled into being complacent, because the labor market is a much more dynamic place than what net jobs numbers reveal. And while we have had very little net job growth in Maine, lots of people are getting hired. And lots of people are going to work. And at the same time, lots of people are being shed out of the labor market. And as that exchange, or that changing of the workforce guard occurs, where some people leave and new people get hired, there's some very important signals that get sent about what are the skill sets that we're losing, where are we losing workers, where are we gaining workers. And one of the emphases of this relationship with the Maine Development Foundation, I think, is to take a much more sophisticated look at the labor market to try and uncover the story underneath and learn a little bit more about dynamism and overall change in the Maine labor market. Largely driven by the fact that we happen to be the an aging state, probably the oldest state in the union. So we consequently also have an aging workforce. That workforce is beginning to retire, and all the data tells us that there are some pretty massive exits in the works. And in Maine, while we certainly don't have growth on the horizon right now, we've got to worry very seriously about replacing the people that are leaving. And, there's been lots of discussion about the kinds of jobs in Maine. Truth be told, we've got one of the most educated and skilled workforces that we've ever had on the field. And many of those people are going to retire. And if we don't have a strategy to replace these folks, we are going to suffer economically, because this is not the kind of situation where you can put a call into Hollywood casting and say, look, I need 100 accountants tomorrow. Those people get built in a supply chain that begins in K-12, and that moves up through the community college and through the post-secondary systems that we have in place. And all of those things have to be coordinated, they have to be cohesive, and most of all, they have to produce to a much higher level of quality than where we've been in order for us to have a shot at the next generation economy.
Okay. So now that we're talking about this jobs report that came out on July 11th, mm-hmm. and we're talking about this new report, tell us some of the highlights of this report. What does it tell us in this report?
Sure. I will just review a little bit about why Maine Development Foundation wanted to take this particular tack, and why we're working with John, and I'll let John talk in more detail about the actual data. Maine Development Foundation was very interested in the work that John is doing to look at job listings on a quarterly basis coming directly from our online job postings from multiple sites, and then also at jobs information that you can call from social media sites. And this gives us some real-time dynamic data about what's happened in the last 3 months in Maine. We are looking at the top occupations that our employers are hiring for now, sectors, the top sectors that are hiring, and really the skills, experience, and degrees that are in demand by employers in Maine. We're interested in that data because we think it's important for job seekers to know what the lay of the land is out there, and particularly for those adult students that we have an interest in, we want them to make strategic decisions about their investments in education and training. So some college degrees tend to be more useful than others. We've learned this from reports through Georgetown University and others. And we want folks who are going to spend their hard-earned dollars and employers who are going to invest in education to do that strategically. And we think this data is very useful in that discussion. And I'll let John talk about the specifics.
Sure, John. So what's in the report? And I do want to get back to the college and versus the community college and the tech field, because I think that's an important element here in Maine. But what's in this report, John?
Okay, the source, as Maggie said, the source of the report is basically from the labor market, which is now largely digital. And so as a result of scraping, spidering across job boards, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, the whole sphere, we're able on a daily basis to aggregate the signals that employers are sending about who they're looking for in terms of workers. And because of the robustness of the data that's being collected and the power of the technology to analyze it, we're able for the first time to go down and drill into this data and look at not just what's the occupation that somebody's looking to hire in, but what are the skill sets that they're looking for, what are the credentials, what are the certifications, what are the qualifications that people are looking for. And that's helped us, I think, illuminate and expose the labor market in many ways that we haven't been able to before. But just some specifics, and I think this is illustrative of the nature of the Maine labor market. Of the top occupations, as we looked at the digital labor market for the period covering January to June 30th of 2013, the occupation with the most postings and the most mentions was registered nurse, where we had about 1,300 job postings. Right behind that were retail salespeople. And this is a story of two different labor markets. Registered nurse requires a great deal of preparation, high levels of education and training, and when we take a look at the wage structure, it pays well. Retail salespeople, on the other hand, oftentimes don't require a high amount of training, don't pay so well. But let's take a look at these different labor markets and why the postings may be large in numbers. Right now, in the case of retail salespeople, we have a lot of part-time jobs. We have a lot of establishments just about in every street corner where you can get fast food and convenience stores. And so there's going to be a lot of that kind of employment in the state of Maine by the sheer numbers of establishments that we've got and the fact that many of them are part-time jobs and the fact that there's a fair degree of turnover in those jobs. So you're going to see lots of job postings. On nurses, on the other hand, it's a little different story. Registered nurses, highly paid, but also probably a fair amount of turnover because the nature of that job is changing right now in that what was once considered mostly patient care work has become increasingly administrative, record-keeping, billing. And for many people who signed on to the nursing profession as caregivers and people who are patient-centered, having some of this intrusion of record-keeping come in hasn't been quite to their liking. So we've consequently seen a fair amount of turnover because those nurses could also go down the street and find another job relatively quickly because of this phenomenon. So this is sort of two sort of extremes of the low-wage and high-wage labor market at work. Some of the other things, by the way, that we're seeing in this report, you know, there are jobs for truck drivers in there. There are jobs for customer service clerks and customer service representatives, fair amount of numbers. But we also find that there's, you know, 300-plus postings for accountants, that there's 400-plus postings for software engineers and the like. So we see across these postings, the top 20, which is what we're looking at, both at the high end and at the low end. And so I think that the labor market, with its richness and diversity of skills and requirements, is alive and well in the state of Maine.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com. And we're talking with Maggie Drummond and John Doerr. And we're talking about some really great reporting numbers, actually, for the state of Maine, even though John tells us the economy is not doing so great and jobs are not getting that higher that well. We do have some good numbers here, and we're going to talk about them this session. So, Maggie, tell me a little bit about some of the other information that was brought forward for this report. And then, John, if you could give us some information, because you did mention during the break about some really good numbers that are still out there having to do with Maine.
Yes. Maine Development Foundation, for those of you who don't know us or haven't worked with us, it really takes the position that there are a lot of positive things happening in Maine, and we approach our work with that in mind. So in addition to all the other programs we run, we had the same feeling starting working on this jobs report that we wanted to be able to use this data to tell a more dynamic story to people in Maine about what's going on in the job market. So, yes, we do have some doom and gloom, but we also have some positive results to share. And John will tell us a little bit about the hiring that we've seen just over the course of the year between 2011 and 2012.
John, we mentioned during the break a little bit about different data sources that are used. And one of the things you mentioned were the advertisements. And we know that advertisement doesn't show the true job hiring pattern. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, maybe in the aggregate sense, pretty good work's been done on taking a look at the relationship between these internet job postings and actually the job vacancies at a national level, where we're looking at something called the Job Opportunities and Labor Turnover Survey, and we're plotting internet job postings against those vacancies. And they track pretty well in terms of direction and trends and the like. So we have some pretty good confidence, although you're right, there's a difference between an actual vacancy and a job posting. So it's important to understand those differences. One of the other things that the Maine Development Foundation was actually, you know, saying, look, great that we have this job postings data, but how can we confirm some of this? There's a very interesting data set that is accessible to anyone who wants to go to the Internet called the Local Employment Dynamics Database that actually tells us industries in Maine that are hiring quarter by quarter, county by county, metro region by metro region. Not only industries that are hiring and the numbers that they're hiring, but what are they being paid? What are the new hires being paid? Also tells us something about the separations and who's being let go. And so for the period in 2011-2012, there were actually 30,000 new hires. Now, while that's not enough to give us the kind of progress that we need to grow jobs, 30,000 new hires is not a trivial number because there's a lot of things that are embedded in that data. The question is, who's being hired? What are the skill sets of people being hired? What are the people who are being hired look like in terms of age, sex? What are they being paid in relation to people who are being let go? It's a very dynamic representation of the labor market that I don't think we're paying enough attention to, anybody, including employers, by the way, who should be paying more attention to this data. And of the 30,000, just in terms of industry breakdown, what we saw is that about 4,300 of those hires were in food service. And eating and drinking places. Again, I'm not shocked by that because that's what our economy has.
It's a huge part of the Maine economy.
To offer for a lot of people who access those services. So I'm not despondent over that number. Now, the other major industry sources of hire is in the healthcare area, not surprisingly. Hospitals, ambulatory healthcare services, you know, nursing and residential care facilities. I mean, those are all sources for new hiring. But also professional, scientific, and technical services, where we've got about 23,000 Maine people employed. They hired 1,300 people during that period. And by the way, when we take a look at the wages in those areas that are being paid to new hires, They're 2 to 3 times above what the average new hire wages are. So good jobs are being added. And that's what I think we have got to pay attention to if we're going to achieve effective alignment between what the economy needs and what our education and training institutions produce. Because if we don't pay attention to that dynamic, we're failing to read a market. In my view, we've been engaged in a lot of social science research around labor markets when we should be engaged in market research in the way that we're marketing goods and services and doing research for that kind of purposes. And I think that's where we're trying to get to with the Maine Development Foundation. We're trying to take a bold step forward and in a new different direction to basically say, the labor market is a market like any other market, and we've got to take a look at who's being hired and why and how to better understand that. And I think from Maggie's standpoint, you know, how do you transmit that all back to the K-12 education system, to the post-secondary institutions, who've got to make some critical choices and some important decisions about what the curriculum looks like, what the standards should be, about who we train for what and what we require them to be able to do in order to be able to tell employers that, hey, we're giving you a product that can perform.
You know, it's interesting. I went to a number of events over the last few months, and they're talking about a skills gap, and they're talking about the fact that if you talk to the president of fluid imaging technology, or you talk to Jackson Laboratories, you talk to some of Hussey Seating, they're all struggling to find skilled workers, skilled, technically skilled, usually in math and science, STEM program, we can talk about that. Yep. But the reality is they don't have them today. And so when you're talking to them about education, they're saying there's a disconnect between what's coming out of the schools and what we actually need. And so we're having to go out of state, we're having to bring it in. And look, as a recruiter, I think that's great. But, you know, from an actual Maine economy, that's a problem, and that is a real dilemma that we're facing. Okay. So how does this show us the roadmap to try to make that, and how many years out are we talking? 3, 5, 7? I mean, where's the where's the point of,
yeah,
that's my question for that.
Yeah, and what you're talking about is what everybody is referring to as the skills gap, which is what are the jobs of the future in Maine and across the country, and how do we help more people be qualified to do those jobs? If you read the recent Press Herald series addressing the job market in Maine, you know, they're saying, well, look at all the numbers. The real growth is in low-wage service positions in Maine. But if you look at those numbers more closely, the fastest growth is in those positions that do require more technical skill and higher levels of education. I had, and this is just an anecdotal story, but I've seen this to be true meeting with employers. I met with an HR director who was talking about one of their most qualified executives who didn't have a college degree, was hired up through the ranks within the company, and she was looking at replacing this individual and said, we would not do that now. We are definitely going to look for someone with a college degree. So in Maine and across the country, Georgetown University has done these numbers on the projections, and at least two-thirds of positions moving forward out to 2020 will require some college experience. And I think that's what we're trying to prepare for here in Maine. Let's get ahead of this curve and help our citizens be as prepared as they can be moving forward for the jobs that we want here in Maine.
So looking at the numbers and where we're talking about the fact that we do have less people in Maine, you know, a skills gap in Maine, though we're hiring 30,000 people, well, that's good, but where's the break-even point? What's the roadmap to make that change?
Well, and I think we need to take a look at the demographic composition of our industry right now. And that data's there, by the way, in terms of what's the makeup of people in these very industries that are dependent on science, technology, engineering, and math skills. And when I take a look at the data, I get frightened because it's an aging population that is going to be able to not only retire but afford to retire because they earned well. They had probably pretty good retirement plans, and I think these are people who are going to be retiring. Whether we can backfill those retirements as readily as we need to, I'm not convinced we can. I think we've got some real challenges ahead of us. Yes, it's one thing to look at projections that take us 20 years out or 10 years out. One of the things I think we need to do is also, along with the projections, which are useful as a tool, is to take a look at day by day. What are these signals that the labor market is sending? So the fact that we've had, 411 openings for software applications developers in the state of Maine ought to be a wake-up call for us and ask ourselves the question, do we have enough people in the pipeline to be able to fill those jobs that are here and now and that we need to fill? And that's where I think some of the rub is coming. Employers aren't finding those people. In part, Maine students, U.S. students in general, have taken oftentimes a wide turnaround rigor in the curriculum. So as opposed to taking a rigorous math class or taking that chemistry class and really preparing yourself in the most rigorous way, we look to a path of least resistance to be able to get the degree without having to experience rigor. And then we show up in the labor market and present ourselves and say, gee whiz, I know all about Elvis and rock and roll, but I don't know much about history and math or chemistry. And I think we're paying a price for that, and I think the skills gap is also more serious than kind of the technical mismatch. I think we've got a broader skills match. At least the data that we're looking at in the MDF jobs report, at the very top of the list, the skills that employers are asking for are skills that are having to do with communications. Second, right behind it, business environment skills. That's basically a code word, is being able to exhibit basic standards of behavior in the workplace. Kind of unfortunate that we have to advertise that at this point, but it's where it's at. But problem solving, critical thinking, a lot of those kinds of qualities that employers increasingly need in the kind of fast-moving environments that they have to function in and make a profit in, we're finding too few people who are equipped with enough of those qualifications to be able to roll with the punches and go with the flows in this fast-moving kind of economic environment. And I think that's in part the skills gap. I think in part, while our culture has gotten rather informal and casual, and individuals have become more independent, the employment environment that they're moving into is a lot more formal. It is highly interdependent because you got to work as a member of your team. So I think our cultural values and our values in the workplace are kind of at odds. And I think we need to come back around to realigning those in order to be able to have this gap that we're talking about kind of go away. Because if it persists, performance in this economy will suffer and our competitiveness certainly will.
We're talking about jobs of the future. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice, continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. And today we're talking with Maggie Drummond. And we're talking with John Doerr, and we're talking about jobs for the future.
Both of you, thanks for being on the show. Again, I appreciate that. And this is a great topic, a very important topic, because it really is about the future of Maine's economy. And I would dare say it's probably the future across the country. If you really look at this, this is a national issue, a national problem. I told a little story during the break, and I'll do a shortened version for the air. But I talked about the fact that there's an employer in Maine who I know that went to a local university and wanted to provide money and development for a program that would help their business. It would help them train people to work for them. And unfortunately, the school basically said no. We have our own program, we have our own particular curricula, and we got to make sure that, you know, it fits within our guidelines, and we're not going to just produce a program that may be beneficial to you or your type of organization. We have our own ways. That, to me, is a problem. And, you know, business and universities have to meet halfway. They have to work to teach kids how to, you know, think for the future. So, Maggie, what's your thoughts on this? Have you heard of these issues? Because I must confess I've heard about more than one.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. This is a critical issue for Maine, and I'm sure for other states and for the country. We certainly need to help our educational institutions become flexible and think about ways that they can grow the type of workforce that we need, and we need more employers, frankly, coming forward and making the ask when they have a need. One of the things we've been doing with the Maine Development Foundation is organizing what we call employers briefings statewide. We've worked with all of the SHRM chapters, the Society for Human Resource Management, and it's just a first step. But what we do is get a panel of our educational institutions to talk about the resources that are available and bring into the room all the human resources managers who are dealing with these issues on the front lines in our businesses statewide. And it starts the conversation. It allows the educational institutions to hear from those employers in the region about what they need and what they're missing. And hopefully some new relationships come out of those events. We also are seeing some positive work be done with employers and educational institutions through what's called Project Login, which is an effort organized by an organization called Educate Maine and started with CEOs of some major companies in Maine, including WEX and Unum, came forward and said to the university system, we have a need for more IT graduates, and we'd like you to work with us to produce these types of students that we can hire and fill the spots that we'll have open in the next few years. That effort is now ongoing. The university system has pledged to double their IT graduates in the next 4 years. And Educate Maine has been able to bring multiple partners into the room to work on all different facets of this issue. And that's just the beginning. We should see many more of those public-private partnerships moving forward, particularly as we learn from this one and we see what works and what doesn't. And I think there's a lot of room for improvement in Maine, certainly.
In the report, it talks a little bit about what is needed, the education that is needed. Talk a little bit about community colleges, universities, tech schools. Where's the focus going to be in the future, and what is needed?
Well, I think it's going to be all of the above. I think you need to look at this not as a set of institutions that will save us, but as a supply chain that is highly interdependent. Because part of our problem is we're pushing kids through K-12, and they're showing up at the doorsteps of community colleges and universities in need of remediation. And so we need to teach basic arithmetic and language and communication skills when we should be teaching higher-order vocational and higher-order baccalaureate-level skill sets. So we need to do a better job of articulating set of standards that, in effect, move people on to the next step when they're qualified to do so. And by the way, we used to do this superbly in the United States of America, just as we superbly aligned our education and industry systems. Case in point is the founding of the University of Maine in the 1860s. It came about through something called the Morrill Land Grant Act, when we all of a sudden pushed agriculture to become more scientific and far more production-oriented. And we figured out that in order to do that, we needed a much more educated workforce doing agriculture in this country. And we created a network of land-grant institutions, of which the University of Maine is one. And we built highly effective partnerships between researchers at the university, extension agents who were the intermediaries that went out and talked with farmers in the field. And a large part of the increase in productivity of U.S. agriculture is attributable to that model. We did it again in the 1950s and the 1960s when we felt under threat, and we managed to create something called the Defense Research Project Agency, National Defense Student Loans and the like, where we had a very tight relationship between what was taught in our schools and what we invested in research and development and what we needed in our economy. So it's not that these things are alien to us. It seems that we've forgotten perhaps how to do some of these things, and we need to very quickly relearn them. Because our economic future is at stake. And, you know, as far as your point, David, about institutions sort of not wanting to respond, it's a very different market environment for institutions. They no longer hold the exclusive franchise of delivering higher education. Higher education is increasingly being done by for-profit institutions who are much more able to respond to the market, a growing movement of venture capital companies that are moving in and see this as an opportunity, who are coming in and much more inclined to turn curriculum and align programs with the needs of the market. So all those dynamics are going on. Also, I think important to point out that, you know, we ought not to overly vocationalize higher education, because those technical requirements are going to continue to change. And it's very important that we have people with a strong intellectual platform of problem-solving, critical thinking, math and quantitative analysis skills, reasoning skills, communication skills, so that their capacity to learn and adjust as employers need to is there. And that's, I think, going to be what's at, I think, a premium.
And those are the skills that you see in demand in the jobs report.
Right.
So we know
yeah.
that this is happening.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You talked about the number one skill being communication. And, you know, all I have to do is go home at times and see my nieces, nephews, or even my son today. They communicate through a text. And I mean from the couch to the love seat. They connect by text. They don't even talk to one another when they're sitting next to one another. Mm-hmm. They text the question.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I laughingly say, you could just ask that question. And they just laugh. But the reality is this is a challenge in the workplace because, you know, and you talked about the mm-hmm. fact of basic communication
yeah.
skills. We're seeing more and more of this becoming a problem. And so how do we address that? Does it, you know, we have to go back and reteach, obviously, the ones that are there. But that's part of the basics, the fundamentals you talk about,
yeah.
John.
Yeah.
And it cuts both ways. I mean, the use of technology is obviously on the rise, and it changes every day, every week. There's some new thing to learn.
There's another
so
app.
For those of us who aren't growing up with it, there's a learning curve around technology in the workplace that for older workers is a big challenge. And for even those of us in the middle of the their working years. And I certainly think for educational institutions, looking at these skills like communication and how to function in a business environment, that's something we have to embed from the very beginning, starting in the K-12 system and continuing throughout as people go to the community college or the university or vocational training after that fact. It's just has to be part of the bedrock.
Yeah. David, my parting recommendations to Maine's legislators, Joint Select Committee on the Workforce and Economic Future, was basically we've got to get schools to look at labor markets as markets and research those markets to understand the performance requirements. We've got to get schools to evaluate the product that they're shipping out in that market, not by an anecdote and feedback, but very systematically. I mean, we know a hell of a lot more about cars that we're selling than about students we're entering into the labor market. You know, and I think we've got to turn that around a little bit. We've got to be willing to put our curriculum on the table and ask tough questions. I mean, the reason that things in our institutions, in my view, have gotten sort of loosened in the standards is because the academy made them so. They're the ones who are loosening the standards. They're the ones who are not standing for rigor. And I think we've got to return to a much more rigorous environment where we're saying, look, in order for you to get this degree, you got to be able to demonstrate this if we're going to have an economy down the road. You know, it's all well and good to have everybody live in the Lake Wobegon world and be above average. I don't think it's going to do much for our productivity if that's right. what we're willing no, to live with. Right. So, and I think a renegotiation needs to take place between, you know, employers out there and educators. And this is not about vocationalizing education. I want to be real clear about that. This mm-hmm. is not about making the academy into a vocational program. But this is about fundamentally having a dialogue about what it is in a rigorous fashion we need to put in place by way of a curriculum to produce individuals who can go out and perform in the workplace. And interestingly enough, the requirements for performing in the workplace and what an individual needs to do these days to function in a very complex democracy are pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. So we're not at odds here in terms of too much of an employer response. I think this is about getting back to rigor and standards and, in effect, strengthening our programs so that we don't cheat ourselves down the road by basically saying, well, we'll make it easy for you going through, and somebody pays the price downstream.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello. I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly so do our communities. Real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're having a great discussion with Maggie Drummond and John Doerr, and we're talking about jobs for the future, especially here in Maine. You know, it's interesting. We just had a great segment talking about the need for education and employers to really get together and talk and really figure out what it is that is needed. And Maggie, talk a little about one of the programs that's already begun that process. And then John, I know you had some really strong feelings about how we can, you know, what we should be able to do and why we should be able to do it. So go ahead, Maggie.
Certainly. Maine Development Foundation has been running a leadership program for the last 20 years called Leadership Maine. And last year we partnered at the urging of our friends at Unum and in partnership with the Maine Principals Association with some support and guidance from the Department of Education. We started specifically a Leadership Maine program for administrators in the K through 12 system. And the program was designed to help administrators as they begin to think about this transition and implement this transition to a standards-based system to increase and grow their leadership skills and to help connect them more directly with employers and with what's going on in the Maine economy and how we need to prepare our students as they come out of the K through 12 system. So we had a full class of 35 administrators, which is superintendents and principals. Last year, we have another full class this year. We've had a waiting list, and we've literally taken these administrators around the state to visit with major employers to talk about what the K through 12 system may need to do to work in a more coordinated way with our employers here in Maine. It's been a very positive experience for us. We think the administrators are getting a lot out of it, and the employers are ecstatic to be able to talk about what they need and how we can all work together to make it happen. So we plan to continue the program, and any administrators out there listening, please contact us. We'd love to talk to you about it.
Well, you know, as a Sigma class, Leadership mm-hmm. Maine alumni, it was a great program, and I highly encourage individuals out there who are looking for that type of education to get that, because it's great. John, talk to us a little bit about, you know, you mentioned mm-hmm. during the break that we, you know, what it is that we really should be looking at to do. So go ahead, tell us.
Well, I think we've had a lot of polite conversations around this subject, and it hasn't moved the needle very much. I think we need to get empirical. I'm a numbers guy. I get much more value out of seeing empirical evidence and driving decisions with it. And so I think institutions that are graduating students today who are workers the next day into the labor market should be obligated 6 months, 12 months down the road to follow up with employers, find out how individuals are performing. Not as an anecdote, you've got plenty of anecdotes around, but as a systematic effort that gives us some strong empirical evidence to see whether, in fact, the students and the graduates coming out of our institutions are meeting the tests and the requirements that are set forth in the workplace. And then if they're not, what is it that we can do by way of this kind of collaboration to strengthen our curriculum, to help students make better choices? I think those are very technical and practical things that we have to do, processes that we need to engage in to ensure that ultimately the product responds to the needs of the market and is, in effect, everybody better off, you know.
No, and I think you're absolutely right. And that would be a very interesting test if somebody would do that, because I think it would be an eye-opener, maybe, for some of the universities in terms of what actually is happening out there. I did want to bring up a little bit of a shift in subject, but this talks a little bit about Maine specifically. There is this talk of two Maines, rural Maine, if you want to call it, above Augusta, maybe above Bangor, or maybe even above Portland sometimes, people will say, and the southern half of the state. Talk to us about your report in terms of how it differentiates between the two, if it does, and some of the challenges that are faced up in Washington County versus maybe York County.
Yeah, in places like Washington County, Northern Penobscot County, Arista County, Oxford County in the West, we once had very strong, robust mill economies, where we literally employed thousands of Mainers in the mills. We paid exceptional wages. There was a supporting industry in the woods that provided the raw material input for those mills, and we enjoyed a pretty strong economy in those places. That has literally imploded on us. When you take a look at the employment numbers in those mills, when you take a look at what's been happening over time to the numbers of workers there, dramatically reduced. Dramatically reduced, even though the level of output oftentimes in terms of paper production has held up relatively high. There's been huge, huge increases in productivity in that industry. But the casualties are workers, often workers in their 50s. That's all they ever knew. That's the life that they lived. They lived it well. All of a sudden, they're stranded. And they're stranded because once that implosion affects them, they can't sell their house. They can't dump their assets and move on to greener pastures. They've got to figure out how to cobble a living. And I have some real compassion for people in Maine who are stuck and trapped in that kind of a reality. I mean, there's been some efforts to help people reskill and retool, and you hear the anecdote about the Millinocket paper worker who got a degree in nursing at the University of Maine and went on to a new and different life. But that's often few and far between. I think we've got a real problem, and we've got to figure out what's our rescue strategy, what's our salvation strategy to kind of basically help people keep their head above water in those very, very troubling kind of circumstances.
Has MDF looked at that in terms of what they think are some of the ways that can be helpful to the rural parts of the state?
It's not something that we specifically have programs working on right now, but certainly we see a good example of an institutional response to providing education and training in rural Maine is the University College System. This is really the rural outreach system for the university system statewide. These are the places where offered throughout the state where folks may be able to plug into degree programs through video conferencing or some other technology that would allow folks to stay where they are but receive the education or training that they might need to do something else. So it hasn't been a focus of ours, but we do see some of that programming focused on that issue.
So talk to us about the challenge because of the aging population and the adults. You know, what do we do with them? When especially we get this problem in their 40s, 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. gosh knows that, you know, we've seen it. How do we solve this problem?
We see some opportunity presented by the number of adults in Maine who have some college experience but didn't finish a degree, for example. We have, according to the census, over 200,000 people in Maine who started but didn't finish college. And we're working right now to help those folks plug back into the educational system in a way that allows them to potentially transition in their career or move up within the same company that they're working for now. If some small percentage of that 200,000 people in Maine were to go back to school or get additional training, that's a real boost to the workforce in Maine, and we see that as an opportunity in terms of our population.
John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I worry about those adults who have done everything right all their lives, all their working lives. You know, they had relatively low skill levels, maybe had a high school education, worked in manufacturing. All of a sudden, there's no longer any call for that work. They're in their 50s, moving from the factory floor into a call center. That's a huge paradigm shift in terms of skill requirements. And I think we need to appreciate more deeply the enormity and the stress that's associated with people having to make those kinds of leaps. And so mm-hmm. programs such as the Maine Development Foundation is promoting, I think we need to expand and recognize that people in their 40s and people into their 50s, they're not done yet. They can't hobble their way to the finish line. They need to make a living, and I think we have a real responsibility to help them in that direction.
This report, where can people find it? Where can people get it?
It is on our website at www.mdf.org.
Also, it will be on the hrpowerhour.com website, information about this show, as well as the ability to download and hear all of this tape one more time, because it's not good just once. You want to hear it at least twice at the hrpowerhour.com. You've been listening to HR Power Hour. John, Maggie, thank you very much for coming in. Appreciate it. And now your HR tip of the week, based on a 2013 Career Builder survey. 27% of bosses have a current direct report that they would like to see leave their company. Results were nearly equal by gender, but varied significantly by age, with younger managers ages 25 to 34 more likely to report having an employee they would like to see leave. So what are some of the warning signs that employees can look for? One, when your manager starts pointing out shortcomings or employees' performance more often. Two, reducing responsibility. Three, hiring someone else to, it looks like, eventually replace you. Move the employee to another work area. These are some of the percentages produced by Career Builders Report. So think about that and your workplace environment. That's your HR Tip of the Week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be speaking with best-selling author, keynote speaker, and chief engagement officer, Kevin Sheridan from the Greater Chicago area. Kevin is going to be talking about trends in employment, engagement, and satisfaction, creating a magnetic culture, recruiting, engaging, and retaining top employees. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.